We are studying in the book of Romans. Why are we in the book of Genesis the last 2 weeks? And why will we continue to be in the book of Genesis for a few weeks? Well, it's like this. The book of Romans takes the time, as it's talking about our important responsibility, to look back at a man by the name of Abraham. And in the book of Genesis, we have a chronicle of the life of Abraham. You know, that's what we like to be able to see, is some place where our name is written down and keeps track of what we've done, what our accomplishments are, and things like that. Some of you may remember back, and maybe it's not been too long, or maybe you're looking forward to the time when your senior year yearbook will come out, or did come out. And when it came out, if it's been in the past, one of the things you did was probably look to see if your picture, your name, what types of things they caught you in candid activity for your senior yearbook. And I can remember back a few years ago when I was finishing up at Faith Baptist Bible College, invested 4 years and a few dollars in this ministry of Bible college in anticipation, be prepared for the ministry. But in all of that, I looked forward to the day when I was going to get that yearbook and be able to see, now, what kind of impact did I have in the school in this 4 years in which I was involved? And I can remember getting that yearbook and looking through it and just paging through and just enjoying all these wonderful documentation and pictures of everybody else. So I looked some more and I found out under seniors I wasn't pictured. And I looked some more, and I looked under different activities, and I thought, well, I'll just look in the back and find out where I am in this vast book of remembrances. And as I looked, my name wasn't even listed in the yearbook. Needless to say, I didn't buy that year's yearbook. It taught me some things, about humility, and talked to me about what priorities were. But as we look back at the yearbook, if you would, of the life of Abraham in the book of Genesis, you'll notice something interesting about this individual that three main religions claim their root to, and an individual who many people would recognize who he is just by his one name, Abraham. We will find that in the book of Genesis, there's only approximately 250 verses ascribed in the book of Genesis to the history of Abraham. I don't know about you, but that really amazed me as I looked through all the various portions, starting in chapter 11 and going through the 25th, I think, or so, chapter of Genesis, to realize that there are only 250 verses. There's more verses for Jacob, more verses for Joseph. The man Job had chapters, 40 chapters, talking about him. If you took all the verses of Abraham and combined them all together, it'd take up about 9 pages of your Bible. But yet he was the man, if you would, that was very important in establishing faith and is referred to, if you want to look at it from this vantage point, in regard to the New Testament, referred to in 35 different passages. Talk about this Abraham. He's found in 11 of the New Testament books in reference to his life and his faith. In 6 different chapters are devoted to his life and faith out of the New Testament. So as you look at the New Testament, over 100 verses, nearly half of what you find in Genesis, are looking back to the life of this man Abraham. It's interesting as you look at his activities, and I'll just list them for you real quick. There's not that many. You would anticipate this man who had all this impact to have a lot of activity. Here they are. Number one, he was called by God. Then he goes and lies about Sarah in Egypt, splits from Lot, rescues Lot, responds to Melchizedek, has a covenant ritual with God, has a child with Hagar named Ishmael at age 86, a response to the covenant with circumcision, age 99, entertains 3 messengers, intercedes for Sodom, lies about Sarah again, this time to Abimelech. Isaac is born. He rejects Ishmael and sends him out on a way. They have a treaty with Abimelech. the sacrifice of Isaac, or attempted sacrifice. He buries Sarah, makes sure he gets a bride for Isaac, and he dies. That is the life of Abraham. Now, it was interesting, because I was really looking through this, and I thought, how much can I really cover regarding Abraham to give individuals an idea of who this great man is? And the synopsis went that quickly. Well, this morning, what I want to accomplish is, within that, is just quickly looking at a few of the items that I have underlined in that list about choices that Abraham made. Because within those just few activities that we see registered about Abraham, there are some significant choices that I think that we can apply to our lives as well. Let's look at those six choices. Number one, in summary, to jeopardize purity for protection was one of his choices. Number two, to defer a major decision to a minor character. Number three, to intercept and intercede for his family member. Number four, to pay tribute to God over gifts from others. Number five, to justify the means by the end. And number six, to lead his family in spiritual identification with God. Now that's just a quick perusal of the different decisions that he had to make. But let's look at six of them. Let's look at these six items under a little bit of a microscope. Can't do too much observation. But what I want to do is not only look at what the cut and dry decision was, but to peel off the layer of the onion and get down underneath and find out what are some of the things that motivate our decisions. What are some things that could have motivated Abraham's decisions? Now, in some of the cases, I have to admit, we don't know what the motive of Abraham was in those decisions. In some cases, we do know. And what we'll be looking at, as we look at each situation, what are some motives we might wrestle with as we deal with things that might be similar to what Abraham dealt with regarding some decisions in this call to follow God. Before we do so, let's have prayer, and then we'll go into the six different things that I find in Genesis about Abraham in regarding his decisions. Father, I ask that you will indeed use me. Use me in a way that will be pleasing to you, that I might be able to draw attention to your Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, for that is the whole purpose of life. And Father, I pray that we might be challenged in regard to some decisions that we make, some choices that we might be involved with. And Father, I pray that even as individuals might be praying with me right now, that their hearts will be prepared to check out what areas of their lives, what decisions that might be coming up, the decisions already made, that might need to be altered according to your word, that you might be glorified. And we ask in Jesus' precious name, amen. If you have your Bibles, you can turn to Genesis chapter 12, is where we'll get started, because right away we find that Abraham, and if you understand that Abraham's name used to be Abram, so Abram and Abraham are the same individual. He just went by Abram until God changed his name to Abraham. But I'll refer to him as Abraham because that's what the New Testament calls him, and that's what he's pretty much known as, is Abraham, because it's God's given new name. But Abraham starts out in verse 10, going down to a land called Egypt. Now, Abraham was concerned about the situation in Egypt because there were a lot of people there. But we know that Abraham was a strong individual as far as the amount of possessions he had. We knew that he had some people within his army that he had developed, 318 different trained soldiers that could go in and take care of things, as we'll look in just a minute. So we know that he wasn't totally in a place where he would be weak. He had some great opportunities to protect himself, but yet as he went into Egypt, he was fearful. And as he went in, he told his wife Sarah, who apparently, even though she was approximately, 65 years old or so, very attractive. Very attractive, so much so that he was fearful that when someone saw her, they would want to have her as wife and be willing to kill him to get her as wife. Now, his reasoning is quite interesting, that he was willing to now go to his sister and say, his sister is wife, and the reason he could claim her as sister is because she was not his full sister, but a half-sister. And so he could actually say in truth, yes, she's my sister, but in his intent was to deceive all those involved to hide the fact that she indeed was his wife. Very interesting situation, going into a foreign land and wanting to totally disassociate himself from that relationship as husband to his wife for his own protection. So here he goes into this new land, and as a result, what happens is verse 14. So it was when Abraham came into Egypt that the Egyptians did see that the woman, that she was very beautiful, and the princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. And he treated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female and all, etc. And the Lord plagued Pharaoh. Okay, because Pharaoh took Sarah into his house to be one of his wives. And fortunately, he did not get, and I think providentially, did not get involved sexually with her to commit that adultery. And God preserved that situation and made it aware to Pharaoh that this is something wrong. And as a result, this error in decision, I would say, was protected through the situation. But let's look at some of the things that were the underlying issues. Abraham was interested in making a decision regarding Sarah. Please say you're my sister, not my wife, so my wife can be spared. What I think he was doing was making some choices. First of all, I think he was choosing deception over honesty for the sake of saving his skin. And the situation ethics in regard to, well, if you just kind of reason it out. I mean, after all, you are my sister. You're not really lying, but in saying that she's his sister, she was implying that she wasn't his wife. In going along with the individuals into Pharaoh's palace, she was continuing the lie, and by him letting them go on, and by him being willing to take the gracious gifts of the Pharaoh, they continued the lie, all justified in saying, well, number one, it's a half-truth, and number two, it's to protect my own skin. And again, we find that those types of underlying things can indeed creep into our own lives, where we might make some decisions where we may not be completely honest, but it might be a partial truth, but it may not be the full truth. It may be a sense where we can say, yes, this is true, but we're leading somebody else to be deceived so it can advantage us. Might be not something for our life. Might be something economically. Might be something to protect us one way or another. But I believe God is very clear that God, in the book of Proverbs, over and again talks about the importance of having honest scales, of having an honest report. Matter of fact, in the six things, seven things that God hates, two of them are associated with deception. It was deception that Satan used to get Eve to comply and to fall into sin. And so honesty was an underlying issue. Was honesty, if honesty were a non-negotiable in the situation, the choice would never have developed that way. And it concerns me that, of course, you know, God gives us the list of what goes on in people's lives. Even the righteous ones, he calls, even those that he chooses to pull out and use for great things, he recognizes and records their failures. And I think in this choice, Abraham failed miserably by being willing to jeopardize the purity of his own wife and the sanctity of his marriage and that covenant. Now, here's why I think this is significant, is because when God called Abraham out, he was calling him in a covenant. He says, I want to make a covenant with you. I want to show how important our bond is together, and how that when I make a promise to you and we're linked together, that's important. And I think it's so ironic that within just who knows how long, next event, Abraham is involved with a situation where he's taken the covenant of marriage and jeopardizing it just to save his own skin and be willing to watch his wife go off into the house of another man, realizing that something could happen there that would not be good for Sarah or for the glory of God. Second of all, I think one of the things that was an underlying issue that affects us many times is that fear of people, of what other people are going to do and how they're going to respond in certain circumstances. Now, Abraham was right. Abraham was right. When he brought Sarah in there, the people responded just the way he thought they would. They saw Sarah, and wow, what a beautiful woman. He was right in his assessment of what might happen, but he was wrong in not trusting God to take care of things in his way. In other words, I believe Abraham's decision here showed a greater fear of people than it did of respect for God's covenant and God's plan and God's purpose. God says, I'm pulling you out of this land so I can show you some great things, etc. And he was almost willing to allow interference to take place. And I don't know what all the ramifications of this are, but if you would imagine if Sarah had indeed become the wife of that Pharaoh, and the decision was made that she would, and Abraham would no longer have her as his wife, where would the promise that God had given to him that his seed would be multiplied and he'd have all these descendants and all this thing? I mean, Abraham fell right into a trap of almost nullifying everything that God had set up. And if Abraham truly believed in the fear of God, that God would keep his promise, he would have marched right into Egypt and not had to go through this element of deception, believing God. If God has promised that I will have children, and that my wife that I have right now is Sarah, I need to take care of this woman. I need to protect her, and I need to trust God will take care of this particular situation. And how many times the fear of people motivates us to make decisions that in the end we realize did not please God. Or maybe even up front we know, I know what God wants me to do, but if I do that, so-and-so will do such and such. Exactly what Abraham said. If we go in and I claim you as my wife, they'll kill me and take you anyway. So just tell them, you're my sister. A third thing that was a kind of underlying issue, and I referred to this already, is just a lack of respect for the marriage commitment. I think this ought to be a challenge to each one of us that are in this marriage or in a pre-marriage stage of realizing the commitment that is there. When God says the two shall become one flesh and no one should be allowed to put them asunder, Abraham almost allowed the Pharaoh to come between him and his wife and to split them up because of his fear of these people. I believe that there was not an adequate respect and belief of the importance of that marriage contract and commitment one with another. So that was his first decision. And I think you can, if you want a scorecard on it and assessment, I would say that Abraham failed in that first choice. Question is, how are we going to do with our decision? 1 Corinthians chapter 10 tells us the elements that are written in the Old Testament are given there to keep us from making the same mistakes. Now, we may not be going out there to pawn our spouse off as a sibling, okay? We may want to pawn them off some other way. But we are not going to go out and pawn our spouses off like that. But there is going to be something that's going to test us and tease us in regard to the issue of, am I going to fear God or am I going to fear men in this situation? Am I going to be honest or am I going to be deceptive? And specifically in areas to the marriage contract, am I going to decide the importance of the covenant of my marriage with my spouse, or am I going to allow these other elements to wash away at that foundation of my marriage? Second of all, I found in 13:1-18, Abraham and Lot both had a lot of cattle and people with them and all this type of stuff. And you'll see right away they get into some difficulties. You know, when you get crowded, you know, I've seen this with siblings. We had this when I was growing up with my brother. We had one room between us. And it gets sometimes where this is my side of the room, don't get on my side of the room. You know, you're breathing my air, get off, you know, type of a thing. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. Why are you messing up this part, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Well, this is what was happening with Abraham and Lot. Abraham was Lot's uncle, and he was actually the senior person to make decisions, etc. And when Abraham noticed that Lot's men were fighting with his men about, we don't have enough room and there's other people in this country too, and we just need to split up. Well, personally, I think they should have split up to begin with, because when God called them, God said, Abraham, I want you to come out of the country and I want you to leave your family. Well, who's Lot? I mean, that's his nephew. That's called family. You know, I mean, it's just, so somehow he messed up from the very beginning in kind of hanging with Lot in the first place. Now, what I'm concerned about is how that Abraham makes this decision. Now, again, we don't know what motivates him. And so a lot of what I'm going to be saying is based on some biblical principles outside of this text, but deals with issues similar when we're talking about making decisions like under this. Like, for example, what he does is he says to Lot, he says, we're kind of crowded here, we're having conflict. You go ahead and make a decision on where you want to go, I'll take the leftovers. Now, at first thought, one might think, well, this is really neat. You know, Abraham is willing to defer within a time of conflict. And I agree with that. I agree with the concept that when we are in an issue of conflict, and it's an issue where I have my rights, and I want this, and they want their rights, and they want that, and there's this conflict, one of the best things we can do is defer to the other individual and say, you know, this isn't that important to me. You go ahead and take whatever you want. If you want the biggest piece of cake, you take the biggest piece of cake. I'll take the smaller piece of cake. And go from that kind of an attitude. But in this situation, I'm a little concerned about Abraham's decision. When God has called him out of this land, going to take him to a special place, and going to show him where he's going to be, and when trouble and strife comes up, Abraham turns to Lot and says, you decide. Now, those of you that have studied out a little bit about the Lot's life, not Lot's wife, Lot's life, you've studied out Lot's life, you'll know that Lot isn't really the king of decision-making himself. He makes some very poor decisions. And I think it's kind of interesting that Abraham, the one who God has called out, is willing to defer that major decision of where they're going to go, where their people are going to be, to this man who we don't know. God doesn't mention anything about God working with Lot. And so my concern here is that even though the underlying issue is, I think, Abraham was desiring to make peace. And I don't think there's any problem at all with making peace. I think that's what we're called to. Romans 12 tells us, as much as lies in you, live at peace with everyone. That should be our goal. To live at peace with them. But you know, there is an element of trying to get peace by deferring making the right decisions. There were situations in one of my first ministries where some of the leaders were not willing to make some decisions. And sometimes the mode of operation was, don't rock the boat. Don't make waves. Just let it roll over. Let somebody else make the decision. And in a sense, they did. And as a result, everything blew up in everybody's face. We had a major mess within a few months. And that taught me something very important, that we cannot defer important major decisions to minor players, if you would, or to individuals that may not be called of God to make those decisions. And in other words, when God calls us to make a decision, we must be willing to make that decision and do that. I think particularly in regard to the idea of when we're called to be a husband. God says, be the leader of your home. And how many times as husbands, we try to seek peace and do so by not making the decisions we need to be making, but by deferring those decisions and by not taking things the way we should. And I believe that's a little bit true of Abraham in this situation. Again, this is something I'm taking biblical principles and applying, because it doesn't tell us exactly why Abraham did what he did. But I'm still not sure it was the best decision. As it worked out, Lot made a very poor decision. He decided to go to Sodom and Gomorrah. And if you know anything about Sodom and Gomorrah ain't no more, because God just blew them all up because it was a bad place to be. you know, Lot made the wrong decision. Here's another thing that I would have really encouraged Abraham to do. Of course, hindsight's 20/20, but to say, you know, Abraham let Lot make a bad decision. He said, "You pick what you want," and he picked and went right into it. And I think that may have played a little bit on Abraham down the road, because Abraham had to live with that reality that he let his sibling go right into this mess that was down at Sodom and Gomorrah, and to see how his life was just imploding. But at any rate, choosing first and taking the leftover as a whole is not a bad decision. It's a way of deferring our rights and resigning our rights, and that's the attitude we ought to have. And I just want to encourage you with that, and it might sound that I'm being a little bit of complex with this particular decision, but there's more to it than just a cut and dry decision. When we're dealing with what God calls us to do something, number one, we need to pick up the reins and do the decision that we want, but we also must be willing in that to resign our rights and what we want. In this particular case, maybe Abraham didn't really care. He probably didn't care where they went, because he didn't know where he was going. He figured God was going to take care of it. But what concerns me is that he was willing to accept Lot's decision and interpret it as God's decision. You know, and that's where I think that what we do not see here is Abraham stopping and saying, okay, we've got conflict here. I need peace. Where do I need to go to get this peace? I don't go to Lot and say, Lot, you make a choice. I go to God and say, God, you called me out of this land. I'm stuck out in the middle of here. We've got fighting going on and all this complexity. What should I do? And I think it's very possible God will say, well, I want you to go this way. Lot can go wherever he wants to go. That's the thing. But the purpose of my bringing this up is making sure that we are being faithful in making decisions. And I guess the principle I want to bring out of this is that I believe Abraham could have made the decision. And I think there's things in our lives where we should make some decisions, but we defer them either to default or passively allow things to go on and take whatever comes down the pike, and we could have some major difficulties develop as a result of that. Regardless of what the turnout is, we need to assess whether or not, if God has called us to be a leader, we must be willing to be proactive in that leadership and make the decisions that need to be made. Third thing that we want to touch on is something that happened as a result of the fact that Lot took this time to go down to Sodom and Gomorrah. Right away, Sodom was taken over by some kings, and they were kidnapped. Abraham hears of that, and the first thing he does, he runs out to get them, and takes his 318 commandos, and they wop, 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 take them, and take everything back, and then they, he protects them. And he puts Lot, and Lot goes right back to the city, and gets right back involved with it. Then we find out a little bit later on in chapter 18, God's visiting with Abraham, and while he's there, God basically says this, well, while I'm here, I might as well tell you what I'm planning on doing. I'm going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And it doesn't take Abraham long to realize, Lot's there. You know, and if he does that, then, you know, Lot's going to be, you know. So Abraham starts this prayer of intercession, if you want to call it, and starts out, well, if there's, 50 people, and keeps on working his way down. God keeps on saying it each one of them, says, no, I wouldn't destroy it if there's that many righteous people in there. And Abraham's going, well, maybe there's not that many. And he gets all the way down to 10 different people. If there's 10 people that are righteous in there, will he destroy it? And God says, yeah, if there's 10 righteous people in there, I will not destroy it. Well, as you know, there weren't 10 righteous people in there. And God destroys Sodom and Gomorrah. But Abraham was willing to stand in the gap. And I think that's an important thing for us in regard to decisions, is to be willing to get involved in other people's lives. What are some underlying issues in this choice? Number one might be responsibility. Abraham did have some kind of responsibility with Lot. He was a family member. He was involved with his decision to let Lot go and do what he wanted to do. Maybe other responsibilities of just caring for those family members. I think the other one was initiation. To be initiative, to be willing to step out and do something instead of just watch it and see what develops. Abraham was willing to take everything he did was immediate. I mean, he saw Lot was in trouble, he went right to his rescue. He saw Lot was in trouble again, went right to his rescue even with God. And I think a third underlying issue is we have compassion. We have compassion to be concerned about making those decisions to get ourselves involved with other people's lives to intercede for them. So in this decision with Abraham, when he makes a decision to intercede for Lot, whether it's rescuing him and intercepting him and bringing him back, or interceding in behalf before God, who's going to destroy the Sodom and Gomorrah, is we see a great compassion and initiation and a willingness to step in these things, even at risk in regard to two different things. I mean, I think it would be an element of risk if you look at the account with Abraham regarding God. I mean, each of his questions with God were kind of apprehensively, well, would you spare it? And he just keeps on going down in small intervals to get down to that small amount. And even at risking his life, taking his 318 commandos out there to try to get them. It would have been very tempting for Abraham to let Lot experience the consequences of his decision. And this is another one of those challenges regarding getting involved. And it's just a sidelight on this because, as I mentioned, some of these are not as cut and dry as others. But sometimes we find ourselves doing a lot of the Lot bailout plan. It may not be Lot, it might be another family member, it might be somebody else, but they through their decision, get themselves into trouble. And we run in initiative, in compassion, and such, and rescue them. But if you have been around long enough, you know that sometimes when you do that, what you do is enable bad decisions to continue on and continue on and to continue on. So the exhortation here is it's not just an element of responsibility, initiation, compassion. There has to be an element of discernment to realize that at some point, with some individuals, you have to get to a place where you just let them experience some of the consequences. Of course, with Lot in these situations, both of them are life and death. So I admire Abraham and willing to get involved with these various things. But I think just for on the record, that it's important for us to discern that people need to realize the consequences of their bad choices as well. Okay, next one. Recognize possessions are God's possessions. In chapter 14 of Genesis, if you want to look at that, that's a very good passage to take just a little bit of extra time with. In Genesis chapter 14, here we have Abraham after he had rescued Lot. And starting in verse 18, he comes across a man by the name of Melchizedek. We can't go into detail about Melchizedek. Melchizedek was a type or a picture of Christ. He's a king. He's a king that was and was not. I mean, he's a king and a priest he just kind of came on the scene and he was gone. And he's a type of Christ. You would see that in Hebrews chapter 5, 8, 9, 10, right around that area. But anyway, going back to our passage in chapter 14, says, and Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine, and he was the priest of God Most High, and he blessed him and said, blessed be Abraham of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered our enemies into your hand. And it says, Abraham gave him a tithe of all, that he was willing to give a tithe to Melchizedek of all that he had. That's a decision that Abraham made that I believe showed his faith in Melchizedek and trusting God in this particular situation. Melchizedek is emphasizing God is the possessor of all things. And when Abraham recognizing that, knowing that God is the possessor of all things, what is it to just give a tithe or 10%? We will see in the very next portion, the king of Sodom wants to give unto Abraham all the spoils of the war. And Abraham says, no, I don't want to do that unless you be the one who makes me rich, or you the one that gives me what I have. Again, reflecting back of his recognition that his wealth and his provisions and such are from a holy God, and that he wanted his identification to be with God. Underlying issues, faith in who owns the properties, wealth is from God, and third, God gets glory, not men. The next few items are going to take us a little bit more time, so I'll just be able to touch on a few of them and then get into our closing comments. But he goes into a few more decisions. And one of those decisions deals with patience. And I think this one's important for us to really highlight here, because this is something, when it comes to decisions, patience is, we want to run in and help God with some things, don't we, at times? And so here's what happens with Abraham and Sarah. Sarah is the one who initiates this. Sarah's looking around, and she's very observant to what's going on. She first notices, okay, we're supposed to have children. There's supposed to be a lot of children. I'm not having children. So she falls back onto some custom that they had in their day. Nothing that was God ordained or designed by God, but the idea of, here, I've got this maid that's been taking care of me. She's, you know, foreigner, not a part of our household, but she's young and she should be able to have children. I will give her to Abraham. He can have relationships with her and she can bear a child. I'll take the child, because that's kind of a surrogate type mother type thing, and I will raise the child under my name. She'll just do all the other stuff, but I'll get the kid. So that was her plan. Thought it was a terrible plan. Abraham said, okay, we'll go with it. And as a result, Hagar becomes the second wife of Abraham, and Ishmael becomes the child of Abraham. And I think what the underlying problem is there, first of all, impatience. Impatience, wanting to help God out, jumping ahead, willing to do things differently just so that we can help God. Second of all, a lack of faith. Not believing God was going to do things the way He said He was going to do them. And thirdly, again, a lack of respect for the marriage covenant. Again, we have hitting right on that same element of the marriage covenant. Now it's Sarah doing it. Probably learned this from Abraham, saying, okay, well, I know that we're one, you know, I know that our relationship's important, but this other issue of, we don't have any children, I want to have children, so I'm going to bring this other woman and get her involved with the situation. These underlying issues, as a result, caused them, in my mind, to make a wrong decision regarding this. Ishmael ends up becoming born. Ishmael becomes the whole Arab nation, and there's been nothing but conflict as a result of that from day one in regard to Isaac and Ishmael. The reason Ishmael ends up being sent away is because Ishmael is making fun of Isaac, even as Isaac is being weaned from his mother. So you see that conflict that is developing could have been avoided if a proper decision had been made. And then a final one that we want to highlight is found in chapter 17, verses 23 through 27. Here's a situation where God spells out things more specifically for Abraham, lets him know that it's not going to be through anybody else in your household, it's not going to be through Ishmael, it's going to be through Isaac and all these types of things. And I'm going to make a covenant with you, and I want you to agree with me on this, and I want you to be identified with me. And this is very important to look at what happens here, because it's just going to be a physical activity called circumcision that God implements. And the purpose of this was an identification type thing. It was the purpose of those who were participating in it were going to be identified with God. And what I see from this situation, when God lays it out for Abraham, this is what must be done. Abraham immediately makes a decision that he's going to implement this in his whole household and on himself as well. And what I see here is finally a decision where Abraham has a respect for the covenant. He respects what God says. He's going to keep his promise. God says, as a way of sealing this promise, this covenant, you take care of this one physical activity, and I'll keep my covenant with you and such. And Abraham immediately respects the covenant and goes through the activity. Here we see Abraham deciding to fear God rather than men. The activity he's going to be implementing on all his servants is not something these individuals are going to like. It's going to be something very painful for them. And so he has to make a decision. Do I want to do things God's way, or do I want to do things that's going to please these people out here? He chooses to do things God's way. And I think thirdly is major emphasis. Abraham just wanted to be identified with God. Now, when we take this and bring this back into how does this apply to our life, I see Abraham being a family leader, a spiritual family leader. And the call that this helps me with is in my life. And just a little bit of my background. Most of you know I grew up without a father. My mom was divorced when I was a few months old, so never had an opportunity to see how a father was to lead a household. And I remember in Bible college, we went through a family class to talk about different family issues and how that the husband is to be the head of the house and that they should lovingly lead and to be able to be a good example and all these type of stuff. And I thought, well, I've never seen that in my own home. And I've never really known what that is all about. So I was driven to the Word and driven to a lot of tapes and books that I read about this issue and all these types of things. And I realized something in my own life. I realized that if I'm going to embark on something like that, I'm going to have to change my attitudes and my ideals as regard to what my role is in a home. And I had to make the decision that if I'm going to be the leader, I'm going to have to be a spiritual leader, not just some breadwinner, not just someone who picks out this or that or does such and such. It's a spiritual leader that is not something that I defer to my wife or someone else, but I have to be the one who is willing to do that so that my family will be identified with God. And I believe that's what Abraham was doing right here. Abraham was deciding, instead of deferring like he did with Lot, and instead of deferring like he did with Sarah when Sarah said, here, take Hagar, Abraham was saying, okay, I understand what you want, God. I'm going to do it. I'm going to lead my family in this decision. And I think that's a challenge for us when we start looking at our responsibilities of being leaders, that we recognize that it involves a choice that identifies us with God. And what are we doing to help our families be identified with God? What are we doing to help them see how wonderful and awesome God is? And that's kind of a great calling that is given to us in regard to this leadership in a spiritual way and another decision that Abraham made. Let's just look in closing at these six different decisions. And maybe what I would encourage you to do, six is a lot to stick up here, okay? So six is hard. But as we read through this, why don't you pick one? Pick one that you're going to commit to going back. And all these verses are on the back of your information sheet. But pick one that you believe God is working on you and decide, now, I've got to make some decisions. One of these, I'm going to look back again at the life of Abraham. Not only am I going to look at the life of Abraham, I'm going to look at some other biblical principles, and I'm going to try to really shape that area of my life. But let's look at them in a review again. Number one, how are you doing at making the hard choices when it comes to integrity? Integrity. Is it my first decision that whatever I do, that it will be an above-board decision on integrity? Boy, this is a tough one. We've got tax season coming up here, right? You know, right after the first of the year, and how we do those type of things. Integrity. How are we doing in regard to honesty? Second of all, conflict. What are my goals in regard to conflict? Is it just to get peace? Is it just to get out from underneath something? Is it just to avoid having people be angry with me? Or am I looking at conflict as a way of accomplishing things for God? Thirdly, how am I doing with choices that involve intercession or involvement for other people? Are we just wanting to stay out of it and say, what's their problem? I mean, Lot, he made that decision. I gave him first choice. He took off. He took the better land. He's in bad shape. You know, he got taken away by those kings. Well, that's his decision. God's going to do something to him? Do I intercede for him? Do I just let him go on? Fourthly, how about the area of possessions? A good number of our decisions we make and choices are wrapped around our material things. Wrapped around that subject called money. Now we make our decisions based on how much money we can save, based upon how good something looks, how something might make us look, how many things we might get for what we invest in. We make decisions regarding work, regarding how much we're going to get, as opposed to maybe how much we might be able to glorify God through it, or how much we might be able to build our family or lead our family spiritually. We make decisions regarding our activities based on material things as a result, as opposed to spiritual decisions. Fifthly, how are we making our decisions regarding patience and trust? Are we trusting God in these areas? Are we really believing that He's going to deliver, or do we have to help Him out? Are you with me on this one? Because I can look at my own life and I can see sometimes when I try to help God out. He's going to help Him, you know. Just give Him a little bit of help. I believe we need to be initiative, and we need to do things. We need to make sure that when we go to help God, that we're doing it His way, not our way. Sixth.